Good day. This is Peter Meyerson sitting in for the inimitable Jeff Davis at Radio Entrepreneurs, which describes the success of entrepreneurship, and we can be heard on Radio Entrepreneurs Network, which I suggest everybody listen to.
Download the app.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm sitting here with Rich Hirshon of Gray, Gray, and Gray, who is my co-host today. Maybe together we can fill Jeffrey's inimitable shoes.
Yeah, the two of us put together might get there. We'll do our best.
We'll do our best. And our guest today is Warren Agin, a lawyer in Boston who specializes in bankruptcy. Hi, Warren.
Hi, Peter. How are you? Hi, Jeff. Thank you very much for having me on.
Rich, that's
Rich. Rich, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
He looks like Jeff sometimes.
I look like Jeff.
I'm gonna get a lot of names wrong, I'm sure, by a lot of people during this discussion.
So why don't you tell us a very quick sketch of who you are and what your practice is about?
Well, I'm a lawyer, a small firm in Boston, and about five lawyers. And in my day job, I'm a bankruptcy trustee. And what I'm involved in now, and what I really wanted to talk to you about, is a new group in the American Bar Association that I'm chairing called the, it's in the business law section, and it's called the Legal Analytics Working Group. And it's focused on the application of math and economic techniques in business law.
This is like cybermetrics for law.
It's exactly like cybermetrics for law.
That's
exactly what it is.
How'd you get interested in this?
Well, you know, it's a funny story. So, you know, my background is my background is a business school, a minor in economics. I learned a lot of advanced sort of analytic techniques, and then you go to law school and you don't use them anymore. And I've wondered for a long time why it is that lawyers don't really use advanced math and economics techniques in their practice. I could be cynical. About a year and a half ago, I listened to this TED Talk by a guy named Dan Ariely, who's a behavioral economist, and he was talking about cheating. And it was a fascinating talk, and it had a lot of application to my work as a bankruptcy trustee because, you know, people cheat in bankruptcy.
Do they really?
They do. They do. And we had to figure out why. Like, that's a big question mark for us. So this was a fascinating talk about it, and I started doing more research into behavioral economics, the studies regarding cheating, and it really was fascinating. But that got me into some of the other things in behavioral economics that are applicable mostly to dispute resolution and mediation, and negotiations especially, and then that gets you into game theory, because when you start really studying behavioral economics, it drags you into game theory techniques, and that was a whole other thing. And then I started, you know, researching this stuff. And what I found is that there's actually a movement going on now, really at the cusp of becoming big, of doing data analysis and applying it to legal concepts.
So how does it work?
Well, I'll give you an example. A couple of companies that are out there now that are selling products are being used by lawyers. One of them, for example, is Lex Machina. And this is just purchased by Lexis, big provider of legal services at the end of last year. And what Lex Machina does is it takes data analytic tools and applies them to litigation situations, mostly in intellectual property. So for example, if you're an intellectual property litigator and you want to find out how your opponent behaves, Lex Machina will actually go in, pull all the cases that involve that lawyer, perform analytic techniques on them to find out exactly by the numbers what that other lawyer does, and that can help you set strategy. And they can do the same thing through the case law, they can do the same thing through the judges, and so forth. So it's an extremely powerful tool. Another great example is something called Ross Intelligence, and Ross Intelligence is actually a artificial intelligence research assistant that is powered by IBM Watson. And a couple of weeks ago, it's actually sponsored by a firm called Denton, so it's a huge international firm. And about 2 weeks ago, they announced that Baker and Hofstetler was the first big law firm to sign a licensing deal with them. Again, they focus mostly on bankruptcy work. And just this last Friday, they announced that Latham & Watkins had signed on as a licensee. So you've got three really big bankruptcy shops that are now using this technology to do legal research.
So, but how does this apply to cheating?
Well, that stuff maybe not so much, but the cheating stuff is really interesting. For example, in Ted Arely's TED Talk, he talked about a study that was done with IBM students, and they put them through a situation where they had the opportunity to have some gain from lying. And you had one group of students that were just allowed to play this game, and about 70% of them cheated on the game.
These are the students.
These are the students. Now, the other group, they told the other group of students, when you take this or play this game, you are subject to the MIT Honor Code. And none of those students cheated. So the conclusion, what he said was really interesting, is that MIT doesn't even have an honor code. So just telling these students that it would be inappropriate for them to mess with, to cheat on this little game, drastically reduced the behavior. And, what the behavioral economic studies actually show is that cheating behavior is not really so much a result of personality. That is, somebody's a liar or not a liar or so forth.
Really?
But it's really a result of set and setting, the circumstances surrounding the activity. And there's a number of different factors that they show through studies, really affect when somebody cheats.
Is that like tone at the top kind of a thing? I see that in my world in accounting and auditing companies and looking at the controls in place and management. And they talk a lot about tone at the top. And what is the tone that management is setting? How are they asking their employees to behave? What mechanisms do they have in place to kind of monitor that?
That's exactly right. The behavioral economic studies definitely show that if there's an expectation of honest behavior, you're much more likely to get honest behavior out
of
your employees.
Expectations. Yeah. Permeated throughout the organization and made clear and bragged about in a way so that everyone knows about it and everyone really feels that when
Correct.
They start to work there.
Correct. And one of the really interesting things about behavioral economics is you can start to go to the studies and look at not only use the studies to structure exactly what you're doing, but you can start to model the numbers to figure out if I do X, Y, and Z, what's my expectation as to how much I reduce the risk that somebody does something that they shouldn't.
So if you bring this back down to your personal practice, does this allow you to sort of evaluate whether somebody is lying, or does it allow you to sort of figure out how to manage their lying?
Yeah, one of the things I have done is I have sort of adjusted my communications and the way I conduct examinations of debtors to try to control that kind of behavior and make them more likely to be open and honest about some particular aspect of their bankruptcy case.
So it sounds fairly unusual for lawyers to engage in this kind of economic process. How did you get involved?
Well, as I said, part of it was just learning about this. I found out about it, very interesting. Some of the stuff in negotiations is tremendously interesting. For example, I think most lawyers know that you start off with a really high number if you want to get people up high, and it gets them thinking about high numbers. Turns out that that's, in behavioral economic terms, a concept called anchoring. And what most lawyers don't know is that you can have the same effect without using the actual negotiation numbers. So, for example, you could be talking about football scores or baseball scores and many other things, and by exposing the other party to numbers in the range where you want them to be, you can actually affect their negotiation behavior. Well, that's a really good example.
With the anchoring.
With the anchoring, yeah.
So you could. I mean, I think historically the issue among lawyers like me who do a lot of negotiation is, do you trust the lawyer on the other side enough to make the range smaller, or do you start with this anchored number? I mean, that's always the issue.
Well, that becomes one of the question marks, right? And I think that's very true, that the trust plays into it a large degree.
I mean, because, I have been burned a few times in that kind of negotiation where you trust somebody and, you throw out what you think is the reasonable high number, as opposed to an unreasonable high number.
And it doesn't, it hurts you in the end, right?
It hurts you in the end.
I've had that happen too. But one of the great things is you can anchor people without having to throw out the unreasonably high number.
How do you anchor them that way?
Well, as I said, you can use other kinds of numbers. You could talk baseball and throw out some numbers that work for you.
So you're saying, you know, like subliminally you talk about a baseball score and get a number out there?
Well, in behavioral economic terms, what really is going on is people are pulling numbers based upon what's at the top of their head. So if you can get at the top of their head, it's sort of in their forebrain, a number that's in the range you want, they'll start to go there. And you don't have to do it by throwing out the unreasonably high settlement number.
So it really is subliminal.
It definitely is. It's taking advantage of how our minds work. So this got us into this group at the ABA. So we're very excited about it. We're going to have our first meeting is going to be in Boston. The ABA Business Law Section has a meeting in early September here in Boston. We've got a program lined up to do an introduction to legal informatics. We've got a guy named Aaron Kahana, who's a machine learning specialist. He's a Codex Fellow and a Minnesota attorney. We've got a guy named Dan Greenwood, who's a researcher at the MIT Media Lab, working on law legal issues. We've got a guy named Michael Bomarito, who's CEO of a company called LexPredict. And we've got a guy named Gary Sangha, who's also a fellow at the Codex Group in Stanford Law School, and he's the CEO of a company called LitIQ, which uses data analytics to help draft and negotiate contracts.
So is it the issue to get the word out to lawyers through this ABA group?
That's exactly it. And you know, having started to get exposed to what's really going on in this particular area of the law, the more I see that there's a lot of big law firms that are coming on board and starting to use these techniques and look at them, and that's going to filter down. I think there's going to be a really big change in how business lawyers, especially, and other lawyers, do their jobs. And so part of the group is to introduce the broader body of lawyers to these ideas and teach them what they need to know to sort of transition.
You know, it's similar to baseball when they started the sabermetrics movement not too long ago. And, you know, you had Billy Beane, I think, of the A's, and that whole Moneyball movie was kind of based on that. So maybe there'll be a movie about what you're doing. Maybe Brad Pitt will play you.
It's nowhere near as interesting. And nowhere near as interesting. And Brad Pitt's too young, I think. Maybe they can make him look older.
Yeah,
that would be good. Yeah. I don't think lawyers are nearly as interesting as baseball. But you're right. And that transition happened within a couple of seasons.
Yeah.
Really, right? There was one, and then the Sox came on board, and then
Epstein was big into it.
Two seasons later, everybody was doing sabermetrics.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. Well, Warren, it's been great having you on. If somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they reach you?
The best way is just to Google my name, frankly, Warren Agin. And we set up a Twitter account at Analytic Law. And the ABA group, if anybody's interested, is at bit.ly, you know, the bit.ly. /ABA_LAWG, all caps. You have to all caps it.
That's great. Do you have a mobile number or that you'd like to give out?
I don't want to give out my mobile number.
Okay.
I get enough emails on my mobile number, but if people Google me, they'll find me.
Okay.
I have one of those names. So
that's great, Warren. It's been great having you on. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. We've been transmitting from Gray and Gray today. Thank you, Rich. It's really
it's
nice.
It's our pleasure. It's a lot of fun.
Have you host us in that way. And we hope that everybody will listen to this show. And if they have any questions, they'll Google Warren and ask about the metrics in the law. Thank you very much, Warren.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you, Rich.
We'll be back after these next messages.